Greetings, friends. This is John Haspel, and I am the Dhamma teacher at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. The podcast will begin in a moment. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for additional podcasts, Dhamma articles, and a calendar of our weekly classes and monthly and yearly retreats. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you find this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you, and enjoy the talk.
Good evening, everyone. I hope you've had an opportunity to empty yourself of some clinging. I've been going back and forth all afternoon about tonight's talk or no talk. And I know we're going to finish wonderfully with Denise is going to, besides the healing bowl, she's going to lead us in some chanting. And a half hour ago, I thought we'd just do a half hour sit and then finish with Denise. And then 15 minutes ago, I thought, you know, I really should talk a little bit about karma and rebirth and not get too deep into it, but talk about it. And then 10 minutes ago, I thought, nah, let's just meditate. So what I'm leading up to,
this is
impermanence, and depending on the timing, where my consciousness is as my mouth is moving is going to determine what we do tonight. You're all accepting that? You're trusting of me? I would like to kind of cap the teachings with karma and rebirth, because it's a fundamental teaching, and it's also something that's misunderstood, but it also explains karma is simply what's going on. You know, there's nothing terribly mystical about that, except why is it? You know, what's the function behind karma? You know, karma is just another word. It's describing something. It's describing something taking place in the phenomenal world. That happens to be the word that's used. The direct translation of karma is action. So what does that mean? Karma is the unfolding, the action of our past intentional or volitional actions impacted by present moment mindfulness. Everybody's got that? Everybody understands that? Nobody understands that. All that that means is that karma is not something arbitrary, and karma is not something personal. It's completely impersonal in the way that it's not something that's imposed on us. It's not something that is only the result of bad actions or only the result of good actions. It's not really something that we can manipulate in a vague sense. It's only in a very direct sense by the state of our consciousness. So what's happening right now to each and every one of us is the unfolding of every intentional act, and I'll get into why that's an important understanding, every intentional or volitional act impacted by the state of our mindfulness in this present moment. And the state of our mindfulness, or the state of our minds, is either going to be, it's going to be some degree of concentration or non-distraction or very reactive. And it's that reactive state or a very well-concentrated state that determines how we experience our karma, how we experience the unfolding of our past volitional acts. Again, remember that karma is completely impersonal. It's not punishment. It's not reward. It's just what's going on. Another way to talk about karma is to talk about yourself. If you want to know what your karma is, take a look in the mirror. That's your karma. If you want to know what your karma is, look at what's going on in your life in this present moment. But it has to be in this present moment. If something bad happened yesterday, something terrible, something you didn't want to happen, you can't look at it and say, well, that's because I got bad karma. That used to be the common belief of karma. It's carried over all these years. In the time of the Buddha, karma was meant more about your lot in life and your caste in life than anything else. You were born into a certain family because of your karma. And it was looked at as either reward, or if you were born into a higher class, it was reward for past actions. And karma was always something that was thrown into the future. But karma is what's going on in this present moment. Karma and rebirth are closely linked concepts and fundamental teachings of the Buddha. Karma and rebirth are conditions arising from a lack of understanding, going back to the first link, first causative link in dependent origination. The reason why that's significant is the Buddha continually talked about ending our karma. The state of nirvana, is the state of ending our karma. It's kind of like the goal, you know, it's what we want to achieve. We don't want to keep creating karma by not understanding who we are. That first causative link. Everything goes back to that. Karma is in no way punishment as a result of arbitrary judgments from a supreme being. Karma is not the consequences from a vague, independent, moral, ethical, spiritual system. Karma is not a condition imposed on us. We alone are the cause of our own karma, and we alone are the cause of rebirth. Karma is not what is happening to us, but our reaction to what is happening to us. Whatever an individual experiences is a result of their conditioned mind. The event itself is impersonal and simply a consequence of being in a phenomenal, impermanent, and uncertain world. Reaction arises from wrong views of self, and it is wrong views that initiate and proliferate karma. Once all wrong views of self are abandoned, karma is extinguished. Once we wake up to who we are, we're not creating any more karma. We're living a karma-free, awakened life. Karma is not necessary to live. Karma is the experience of an unawakened mind in this present moment. An example of this is worldly causes and conditions. As a consequence of living in an uncertain, phenomenal world, we are all subject to the conditions of this world. If an earthquake happens right now and we're blown out of the Catskills, it's not because of karma. It's because we're living in a world that's subject to those kind of things. If we happen to get caught in the middle of a war and something awful happens to us or our families, it's not a result of karma. That's the result of living in an uncertain, impermanent world. The experience, our reaction to what happens if we get blown off this mountain or we get caught in the middle of a war, the reaction is what's creating our karma. Right? Our judgment of it, our lack of judgment or our wise discernment is ending karma. So karma is not us stuck in this grand scheme of things. It's our experience of what's going on in this present moment. Present moment mindfulness impacts our karma. Right? Lisa?
I'm trying to get the purpose of karma.
Well, first remember, karma is just a word.
Right.
And karma, there's really not a purpose, except karma is the word that's applied to the unfolding of an unawakened human being. What's happening?
The mind state and
the impetus from our past actions. It's simply a word describing the life of a deluded human being. An awakened human being creates no more karma because they've cut all attachments and they're living they're empty of attachments. They're empty of judgments. They're empty of reaction. They're just simple. Pardon me? Karma is the present moment experience. Let me put it a different way.
No, the reason I say that is because I'm always in a given moment.
Yep.
I should always be having some kind of karma.
But your reaction to what's going on in this present moment is what's going to create the next moment, the next karma, the next experience of karma. Charlie?
I mean, see if this works and John tell me if I'm on fire. I always think of it, that's the best way that I
The second?
Second. So things happen to us in life, good and bad. Sometimes bad things happen, and you get a second error of taking on some sort of enjoyable example of being anxious, an anxious person, versus just being an anxious woman.
So I guess the question I have now is, karma's not gone.
Karma's not, the echo's got me a little bit.
Is karma gone, or is it just different?
Is karma gone?
In other words, right. So if I don't have a reaction, then and I'm just present with whatever.
You will if you truly have a mind that is resting in equanimity, non-reactive, non-judgmental, going back to that whole idea of clinging, you know, as the cause of dukkha. Remember, the Dhamma is here so that we end dukkha. No other, I mean, that's a pretty big thing. It's pretty grand, but no other grand idea. The ending, the cessation of dukkha. Another way to classify dukkha is karma. As our karma unfolds, we're experiencing dukkha. When we end the causes of dukkha, we end our karma because we cease creating the necessity. Karma, that's another way to describe it. Karma is the necessary unfolding of our own, excuse the word, ignorance.
Okay. It sounds like it's the same. I don't understand. I don't think it's any different, which is why it's not there when you're awakening. Because if it's a state of the present moment, then I would still have it if I were awakening.
One of the reasons why I debated even teaching it tonight, and again, excuse me for comparing myself to the Buddha. The Buddha considered the same thing, and the reason why he did is because it was a common term in people that were studying some kind of Dhamma, and he felt that he needed to explain it in a way that fit into the Dhamma. And basically what he said is, your ideas of karma are wrong. People had tied it into all these intricate societal systems, and we're using the term to say, I have this great life because of my wonderful karma, I have this awful life because I'm being punished for, and that takes out the responsibility of this present moment. It takes, why be mindful of the present moment if we can't change anything about it? But we can, that's the Buddha's teaching. So he used the common term, karma, or kama, to describe something completely different than what people believed. And also, there was not a strong connection between karma and rebirth in the common belief of the time. It was really two separate things. The Buddha described karma in the context of rebirth, that it's our karma that's driving rebirth. And remember, not just physical rebirth, but I'll talk about that in a minute. The moment by moment birthing of our own experience. And that kind of relates back to that whole idea of kalapas and how things are arising and falling apart, arising and extinguishing themselves moment by moment. And that relates to the physical body. Maura?
I was just going to give, perhaps, and you can correct me on this, but an example. So, for example, I have many, many times throughout the day, I'm not mindful of the Eightfold Path. I am clinging after something, I'm not really paying attention, you know, what's going on inside me, outside me, honestly, you know, my concentration is not strong. So I am conditioning my mind to create more distraction. Then I step out of the dining hall, I get distracted by a conversation. The conversation is distracting. My mind is conditioned towards distraction. And I don't recall what I'm supposed to be doing, so I don't go get the check, and God has to remind me, etc. And if I react to that, I am further conditioning my mind towards a mind of the similar distraction, rather than recognizing, yes, distraction has arisen again, pleasant, unpleasant, you know, being mindful of where this all fits in, where I, you know, not over the analytical, but just being at peace with it. This is the result of my conditioned mind.
Yeah, and an unconditioned mind creates no more karma. And
that's going on all day long. You know, I'm still looking at the sunset, you know, kind of, I'm trying to be a little bit more mindful of not letting, you know, being distracted, because I'm just moving out of something, I'm moving towards something more pleasant, moving away from something unpleasant.
The point of that's a very good example of it. The word karma, or even the concept of karma, is that it's up to us how we experience our lives. We can alter karma no matter what energy we have pushing us forward into each moment. If we take to the Dhamma and change the way we think, if we develop a deep sense of present moment mindfulness within that framework of the Eightfold Path, We change the unfolding of our karma to the point that we can extinguish. We can gain control of our lives, is really what that's about. We're no longer being pushed into each moment from ignorance, excuse the word again, but we're defining our lives through wisdom, moment by moment. We're not living in chaos anymore, no matter what's going on around us, no matter how chaotic the world is. We're not subject to the causes, we're not subject to the reaction of the causes and conditions of the world. Joy, did you have a question before I go just a little bit further? I'm not going to read a lot.
No, I was going to kind of get the same point more. You've explained it very well in the past. It's skewer conditioned mind. So for, say, lies or cheats or steals, it's conditioning our mind in a negative way.
Yeah, it's not karma.
In the present moment, we can recondition our mind towards a more unbound, liberated.
Karma is not a zero-sum game, though. In other words, if I commit 10 murders in the last 10 lifetimes, that doesn't mean my next 10 lifetimes I'm gonna be murdered 10 times. A lot of people think that it's a zero-sum game. That takes mindfulness completely out of it. It takes the Dhamma out of it. And the Buddha said, no, that's not it. And the perfect example is King Ashokan that I talked about. King Ashokan, who was responsible for murdering millions and millions of people. Well, hundreds of thousands anyway. His karma wasn't to die 100,000 violent deaths. He awoken through the teachings of the Buddha, and that was the end of his suffering. There's not some other entity saying, wait a minute, you still got a debt to pay. And again, the reason why I'm teaching this tonight is a lot of people see karma that way. That no matter what happens, if you messed up enough, you're going to have to pay for it. The Buddha's teaching on impermanence and waking up says, no, that's not true. Wake up and you cease creating karma. There might be some volitional energy behind that. There might be something. There's a sutta that the Buddha taught about 6 months before he died. And it's a little vague. But he alludes to the fact that his death is his final act of extinguishing his karma. That there was something he knew, he was aware of something that still had to be cleansed or ripened. A lot of times karma is talked about of ripening of past acts. But the important thing to know is that we can change it. If we couldn't change it, we'd just be stuck in this. So let me just read two paragraphs and then I'm going to finish this. I don't want to get too deep into this tonight. Karma is the reaction to present events influenced from past reactions and impacted by the present state of mind. So things are going to unfold because of decisions I made a moment ago or 3 years ago. A good example of this is at some point all of you decided that you wanted to try to understand the Dhamma at some point. That initial decision put you here tonight, whether you're glad about that or not. It's that decision that got you here tonight. That's kind of a very general explanation of karma. If at some point... maybe at a class I was a little bit more astute and you woke up at the class, you probably wouldn't be here tonight. That's another example of karma. There'd be no reason for you to continue to... I understand?
But if we were more mindful
on
our cushion, maybe we would wake up.
I get it. They're silly examples, but the point is that as things unfold, we take actions, the word karma, and that determines what's going to happen. If we make mindful actions based on wisdom, we don't create more entanglements in our lives. We remain free of that clinging that continues to create dukkha. Again, the Buddha's only concern was, how do we get rid of dukkha? How do we eliminate that? How do we put it behind us? Through wisdom. Another word for dukkha is karma. We're living our dukkha moment by moment. We're living that stress and unhappiness. So again, karma is not some big magical mystical idea. It's simply what's going on in this present moment. One more paragraph, then I'm going to give an example that I hope is helpful. It is wrong view to make a correlation between any life event or situation and karma. Right view is to recognize the mind state present in any situation as karma. Did that sink in? Did that make sense? Yeah, I'm trying to get too much done and I'm reading quickly. It is wrong view, right? Wrong view. To make a correlation between any life event or situation and karma. You can't separate an event and saying this singular event is karma, I'm being punished for something, or it's a reward. The important thing to remember, it's an unfolding of everything that we've done, every decision we've made, every action we've taken, is occurring in this present moment, and our experience of it is impacted by the present state of our mind. Right view is to recognize the mind state present in any situation as karma. So if our mind is reactive, if we're resistant to our own life, it's going to create tremendous suffering. If we're simply present with what's there, seeing it as this is just what is, we're not reacting to it. We're not creating any more karma. I often describe dukkha as wanting the people or events of our lives, including ourselves, to be different than they are. Ending karma is seeing the people and events of our lives, including ourselves, just as we are. Not just as we are and being okay with it, just as we are. You know, that and being okay is, well, nothing I can do about it, or, well, you know, I'm awakened now, so I'm just going to accept everything. That's a kind of stoicism that can grow out of the Dhamma. That's not it. It's seeing things without any of that judgmental point of view. A judgment is an attachment. An awakened human being lives in this present moment, period. Not lives in this present moment happily, not lives in this present moment sadly. There's no adjective, there's no descriptor to the experience. There's none needed. And then there's nothing pushing us into the next moment. We stay fully present. In a sense, not linear time, but in a sense, time stops. You know, there's not something that's unfolding that we're hanging on to. Life unfolds, and we're always in the present moment. Rebirth. When the Buddha says rebirth has ended, he's talking about two things. He's talking about a physical birth. There's nothing pushing that, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. So, just one example I want to give. Remember that the whole point of the Dhamma was to end suffering. When we end karma, we end the birthing of the next moment of suffering or confusion or distraction. We don't do it anymore. Does that explain? I mean, that's really what I'm trying to say tonight. Karma pushes us into the next moment of dukkha. The ending of karma is also the ending of dukkha. It's kind of the point or the goal of the Dhamma. It's not something that's happening to us. It's something that we have complete control over how we experience it.
The expression is in absolute complete control.
You mean as far as controlling the next moment?
Yeah.
That's the function of a non-distracted mind, a mind that's settled in samadhi. But it also doesn't seem possible. There's nothing that I've ever come across that the Buddha used to describe that, because it's indescribable. Come and see for yourself. You can't describe a state. Awakening occurs in impermanence, but the experience of it is outside of that, outside of the phenomenal world. We're not affected by it anymore. You can't describe something that's not part of our own understanding. It's beyond that. Pardon me? It's death. It's death of the ego. That's exactly it. Again, that the Buddha said. That's the teachings on not self. Don't hang on to it, because at some point it's not going to be here. It's impermanent.
And it's outside the mind. Meaning, it's outside language. So
it is. I could make up a word, and maybe try to even convince you that word has meaning. You know, if I was really good in certain techniques, like maybe NLP, I could make up this strange word and say, this is what the awakened experience is. And if I was really good at that, I could convince you of it, but it wouldn't be true. It's only something that can be experienced. But if that's where right view comes in. We understand those four noble truths. We accept them. We can observe that. Everything that the Buddha teaches can be observed in the physical world. He doesn't teach the state of awakening. He says that if you do this, you'll be free of dukkha. Again, we're a lot of our minds see an awakened human being as something magical or mystical. It's simply a human being who is free of dukkha. It's a hard thing. That even that alone is hard to accept because our ego is stuck in it. No, not at the end of our life.
It could be tomorrow, it could be this moment. I didn't mean the end of my life, I misspoke. But Charlie, you seem to be wanting to say, well, what do I do right now? I thought you wanted to, you were saying, well, I understand that, but how do I get there? And I know we've been talking about it, so.
Thank you, Maura. Let me just bring this back to this. To clinging and what we started this whole thing. Holding the intention to abandon all clinging, craving, desire, and aversion diminishes the distraction of dukkha. Abandoning clinging interrupts the establishment and defense of an ego self. Right? This is we're getting to the point, to the goal of all of this. Unskillful intentions and resulting actions will create additional karma. Right? If we're not functioning within the framework of the Eightfold Path, we're going to create situations in our lives that lay down the need for negative experiences to unfold. You know, we can get into mystical reasons. Well, it's happened so that we're learning the state of our consciousness. It's not even that far removed. It's just what's going on. Moment by moment, we're experiencing the unfolding of our past volitional acts impacted by present moment mindfulness. That's karma. Right intention will lead to the cessation of unskillful actions and bringing an end to karma. Right intention is holding the strong resolve to put aside all clinging, craving, desire, and aversion. Right intention arising from right view generates the moral and ethical actions of right speech, action, and livelihood. The virtuous aspects of the Eightfold Path lead to the abandonment of desire. So we see where we're clinging when we're engaging in wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. That's why the framework is so effective. It shows us what we're holding on to. It shows us where our desires are drawing us to. If we're engaged in right speech, action, and livelihood, we're not creating any more delusion for ourselves. We're not creating any more clinging. Right intention arising from right view informs a practice developing right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation. One more paragraph. At Savatthi, the Buddha said, "Monks, what a man wills, What he plans, what he dwells on, forms the basis for the continuation of consciousness. Now remember the teachings on consciousness with a small c. The continuation of the judgmental discernment of what's going on, what's happening to our senses. That's the consciousness the Buddha's talking about. What he dwells on forms the basis for the continuation of consciousness. This basis being present, consciousness has a lodgment. We're stuck in it. It's part of conditioned mind. Consciousness being lodged there and growing, rebirth of renewed existence takes place in the future, and that future could be in the next moment, it could be pushed into the next lifetime. And from this renewed existence arise birth, decay, and death, grief, lamentation, suffering, sorrow, and despair. Such is the uprising of this entire mass of suffering. This entire mass of suffering is karma. The great thing about karma is that it can be ended, and it can be ended in this present moment. Even if a man does not will and plan, yet if he dwells on something, this forms a basis for the continuation of consciousness. Dwelling on something means attaching to something. Rebirth takes place. But if a man, excuse the use of the male gender there, but if a man neither wills nor plans nor dwells on anything, in other words, the emptiness of clinging, no basis is formed for the continuation of consciousness. This basis being absent, consciousness has no lodgment, has nothing to hang on to. Consciousness not being lodged there and not growing, no rebirth of renewed existence takes place in the future. And so birth, decay, and death, grief, lamentation, suffering, sorrow, and despair are destroyed. Such is the cessation of this entire mass of suffering. That's the Buddha's teachings on the effects of karma. It's also the teaching that karma can be ended by taking to the Dhamma wholeheartedly and extinguishing ignorance by bringing wisdom into our understanding. By seeing things clearly, we cease to create karma. And look at karma as birthing the next moment of confusion. It's much more applicable seeing it that way than to see karma as pushing us into another birth, although it will. And I'll try to explain that and then end this talk on karma, because, again, I think we've covered enough. Excuse me. I was thinking in the best way to describe how karma pushes us from a physical body, that body dies, into another rebirth. And this is the best example I can come up with, and I hope it works. We've all heard, I think, that the human body regenerates every cell about every 7 years, right? We all have heard that. If you haven't heard it, that's what they say. That's a good example of impermanence also. It's a good example that who I am right now is, even physically, completely different of who I was when I was 52 years old. I'm 59 now. Also, if I look at my life, I'm a completely different John, even though it's the same name, than I was when I was 5, 2, 18, 27, 58 and a half. My eyes are still blue. My height is about the same. I'm getting a little bit shorter than I was, but it's about the same. My skin color is about the same. My hair has been like this for about 8 years. By some outward appearances, I'm still the same John, but most appearances and most aspects of my physical self are completely different. Moment by moment, I am a completely different person than I was. Yet there's a continuation too, isn't there? There's still something that's identifiable, that's having an experience from this physical birth through my lifetime up until this present moment, even though everything has changed moment by moment. Even my physical body has changed, This thing that you see in front of you is nothing. There's not a shred of it left that was there in the beginning of this physical life. When a physical body dies, everything stops. But there's a continuation. Let me go back just a little bit. As these cells in my body are dying and being reborn, you don't notice it. You don't notice that there's a change. But that continuation is taking place. I've gone from a 1-year-old John to a 5-year-old John to a 59-year-old John. There's something in that continuation, correct? But every moment, that John is new. Every single moment. Even if you just acknowledge, and it's a little bit of a stretch, because it's not quite this, it's not quite true, that even one cell is different from one moment to another, so that makes this different. But it's more than that. It's billions of cells, billions of things go into and out of existence to keep this continuation housed in this body. The difference between death and that seven-year thing that each cell is replaced is that every cell is replaced at death. Each cell dies. And there's a pause. During that pause, there's a continuation of whatever this is. It's no longer John. It's no more John than I am John at 2 years old and 59. It's something completely different. Are you following? Is this a good example? No, but are you following the slightly diluted logic? Because I'm trying to make the point. The trouble that most people have with karma and rebirth is, okay, what happens between death and the next body that you inhabit? And there's all kinds of legends about that, about the in-between time. And I'm not going to get into that. That's kind of like asking to define the state of awakening. What does it look like? But in a purely, not a physical sense, in a sense that you've all experienced in your bodies, going from the ROM at 2 years old to the ROM at whatever age you're at, everything has changed in your body. Every molecule in your body is different. And yet there's a continuation that we call ROM. But it's a dispassionate, there's no connection. There's no real connection that you can... let me get back to myself. There's no real connection that I can draw from who I am now to who I was even a minute ago, but it's easier to see 50 years ago, except that it's housed in the same body. The only difference between the rebirth that this body is going to experience in the next moment in front of you and the rebirth in a different body is just that. In the phenomenal world, the body has X number of years. It can't continue anymore. It's part of the physical laws of this universe. And yet there's a purpose behind karma unfolding. I haven't awakened yet. I'm causing my own suffering by not awakening, and I'm pushing myself into another experience. That's why the Buddha says, if you want to end all suffering, wake up. When the Buddha died at 80 years old, he told his friends, this is the last you'll see of me. There's no reason for me to come back here. There's all kind of legends that another Buddha will be born, but it won't be Shakyamuni. There's no reason for it. His karma is extinguished. He's lived the holy life, meaning he's done everything that he can do. He's awakened. We won't. We're going to experience dukkha in the next moment. Well, that's not a definite prediction. We're going to experience dukkha in the next present moment because of our karma. And if we don't do it in this lifetime, we're just going to be pushed into another existence that's almost exactly the same that we're experiencing in this physical body, except there'll be a lag. An imperceptible lag, I believe, but a lag. Dave.
I totally agree that there's this thing that starts from a young age and eventually goes to death. You're talking about your body, but it's also your ego personality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the two of them together are this thing that's changing throughout time. Okay? And then you said at death, the cells die, the body dies. You're not saying that the ego personality continues to the next life.
No, but the continuation of the tendencies. In other words, I won't be born as John again if I don't do it, if I don't wake up. The Jataka tales are interesting. The Jataka tales are tales of the continuation of the Buddha in past lives, but not the Buddha. He was the entity had all different types of experiences that continued to push karma forward, but none of them were identified as Siddhartha Gautama. There's a continuation, but it's not a continuation of an individual soul. It's like, I thought that would be a good explanation, I guess not. It's like I have three candles, and one's lit, and I take the light of that candle and I light the next candle. And that candle I take, and you could take this infinitely, and I light the next candle. Is that third candle the same as the first candle? Is the light in the candle the same as the first candle? Yet there's a continuity between the three candles, or an infinite number. You could lay out candles forever. From that first light, each candle is lit. Each candle has very similar appearances. There's an essential nature, fire, that lit all those candles. There's an essential nature in that one-year-old John who lit the candle of the two-year-old John and the three-year-old John. But it's still not the same as that first candle, that first light, is it? And the energy of karma pushes that candle into light, another physical body. But it's that impersonal. The significant difference is that a candle doesn't jump and become the next candle and eliminate the first candle or even affect the next candle. And the individual John did not die, when John grows each moment by moment by moment, what's present is what is here in this having this experience. It's that karma unfolding. What John decides or doesn't decide, what John alludes to, determines the lighting of the next candle. Am I making it more confusing? I think I am. It's not a soul.
You're hesitant to give it a name, but it has to be something, because nothing is nothing. Like, it still has, whether it's an energy or an essence or a soul or whatever, but something passed from the candle to the candle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is.
And it's more like, it's an energy. I mean, really, for me, at the end of the day, I look at that as an energy that's being passed by. And if it's a continuity, it has to start somewhere and continue with that same string.
Remember the talk this afternoon on the five clinging aggregates. Mm-hmm. This has to do with this, with what the energy experiences. We're only talking about ending dukkha. I refuse to use the word soul because that has different connotations that really don't apply. So let's call it an entity, but please don't individuate that. The entity is involved in this world as a clinging aggregate because it does not understand its true nature. It is not yet an awakened human being. Again, we're not talking about anything mystical or magical, and that's where it can easily go to. When this entity that is a clinging aggregate continues to make the same choices and live the same way mindlessly, it's going to continue its own suffering. When it ceases doing that, when it becomes a non-clinging aggregate, when it is free of all clinging, craving, desire, it does not create any more suffering. Dukkha, and I probably shouldn't have gotten into the physical birth stuff, so forget about that. But consider what you're creating in the next moment. It's the same continuation of energy, but it's no longer that identity that's locked into an ego personality. Just as this John, physical John, is completely different than a John 50 years ago or 8 seconds ago, so is the awakened John from the clinging John, the unawakened John. That's the difference. That's the significant difference. It's the only difference that matters. So if you see karma as pushing the next moment of rebirth, the choice is, am I going to experience myself as an awakened human being, or am I going to continue my own suffering?
So if I don't awaken in this life, and my body has had enough, and there's something
is in me that creates, that has taken the sword, that will come back again into a new form.
With the opportunity to awaken.
To something else.
With the opportunity to awaken. Again, the Dalai Lama's quote. Well, the problem is we can't imagine ourselves without a physical body that has that houses us. So if you take that, I should point out that there's some very famous Buddhist teachers, Stephen Batchelor comes to mind, who refuse to accept any notion of rebirth. Not that he says it can't possibly happen, he says it's useless to even think about because we can't know. And since we can't know, even doing what I'm doing tonight is a distraction to the Dhamma, and it just may be. The reason why I'm bringing it up is kind of like bringing up dependent origination. You're going to hear about it. You're going to wonder about it. I think that I should talk about it, but I should also talk about it in the sense: forget about those 10 middle causative links. Ignorance causes suffering. Forget about the idea of karma pushing us into another body because that in-between period is something we can't reconcile in our minds. Understand that karma is the outplaying of poor decisions. It's an outplaying of mindlessness. If we develop a mindfulness within the framework of the Eightfold Path, we end our karma. The whole point of the Dhamma, the whole point of this weekend, is to empty ourselves of clinging, because it's clinging that causes all the suffering that we have in this moment. Nothing else really matters. Nothing else really matters. The Buddha, in his incredible infinite wisdom, recognized four noble truths. He recognized suffering. He recognized the cause of suffering. He recognized that we can end suffering. And he gave us a path to do it, and that's the Eightfold Path. Which is why I always weigh all this within reference of the Eightfold Path. The notion of dependent co-arising has no bearing on anything except within that framework. Karma and rebirth, let's just talk about karma. Doesn't mean anything except within that framework of the Eightfold Path. It doesn't apply to anything. So that's really the important thing to understand about karma. It's what's going on right now. You want to know your karma, look in the mirror. But also remember that you can change your karma in any instant that you choose. Right? Deb.
Can I just ask one really
Please.
Basic question? I'm sorry. But we keep talking about the present moment. I keep hearing everyone's living in this. But what is the present moment? Because, you know, just the example of pleasure and pain, you know, it seems like once you thought of it, you're the next moment. Mm-hmm. Do you know
the yeah. present moment is the present moment is the first thing that we should stop holding on to. The present moment is not something that, again, it's one of those things that you can't. The present moment is what happens between death and rebirth. The present moment is a place of peace. It's a place where the mind is in. It's not in the past. It's not in the future. It's here with the current experience that you're having. It's seeing things clearly without any kind of good or bad application to it.
And you can't think about the present moment because the present moment is the place where you don't think.
It's a place where you're aware, but you're not
right.
you're not evaluating.
Right.
Present moment mindfulness. The whole point of mindfulness is to bring our minds into the present moment. We also have to lose the idea of linear time. You know, past and future, we use clocks because it helps us get through the day. They have no meaning other than that. You know, a clock doesn't define time. We accept that a minute takes 60 seconds to unfold, but that's arbitrary in a sense. Our minds follow that linear path. We remember something that happened a few minutes ago. We're concerned about where we're maybe not concerned. We're eager to get to the next moment. But in between that is where we are. We don't exist back there. We don't exist in the future. One of the reasons why I think using the breath as an anchor for meditation is that we cannot recollect a breath. I mean, we know we breathed yesterday or a minute ago, but we can't feel it. We can't connect to it. And we cannot take a breath for the future, for tomorrow or the next moment. When I bring my mind, when I bring my mindfulness to the sensation of breathing, I'm bringing my mind into the present moment. And we all have had that experience of present moment mindfulness. Everybody that has meditated even for just a short while has had even a brief experience of being in the present moment. And it's no big deal, is it? I mean, it's ordinary. It's not something magical or mystical. It's the present moment.
Huh?
Please.
I like the word magic and mystical. It's my word. It's my life.
That's fine.
My soul flies out of this body. So love and magic and mystical.
You got it.
And yes, I use the word soul too.
We
why am I here?
I suppose you can describe any profound experience or wonderful experience as mystical.
And I have a feeling some during the bowl sessions can have a mystical experience.
Yeah, I don't know. Joy, you had a question?
It's not a question. I'd like to share a brief story that I hope will be helpful. One of the stories that helped me understand this concept of the present moment. Oops, next present moment. Oops. There's a meditation teacher, Tara Brock. Are you familiar with her?
Yeah.
She tells this lighthearted, really sweet story. She's married to somebody whom she's very connected to. And they were on a walk and they were having a wonderful time, laughing, flirting, and it was beautiful outside. And she turned to her husband and said, "This is the best moment." And before she even had a moment done, he said, "No, this is the best moment." And she said, "No, this is the best moment." And they went on that way. And that's the story that helped me understand the present moment. That it was moment by moment by moment. And so your question is insightful and important. It's the moment, and now we're in the next moment, and now it's the next moment. And before hearing that funny story, I felt the present moment concept as daunting. I didn't get it. I was going to miss it. Oh, there it is. Oh, wrong speech, sorry. you know, and that just kind of messed it all up. But that story turned it for me. That thinking of the two of them laughing and identifying that it's moment by moment by moment, it actually filled me with hope that when I have a bad moment, no worries, here's the next moment. So I hope that's better.
I think it is. So, Denise?
Yes.
Magical and mystical are wonderful experiences.
But don't be attached to them.
That's a good thing. But you know, when I don't say that we should not even acknowledge magical or mystical experiences. The only thing I ever say is that there's nothing magical or mystical about the Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly practical. Mm-hmm. There's an infinite number of mystical experiences. I've had them. And you're right to describe maybe some experiences that people have with the bowls are mystical. But don't look for mystical within the Dhamma, or you'll just be you'll be disappointed, you'll be confused, because it's not there. It's not meant to be there. It's not that type of teaching. It's the only thing I ever say.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I use the example of the mountain. I think that mountain that I've been looking at for 4 days, how it's changed moment by moment, is pretty magical and mystical, you know? But underneath the magical and mystical, I can see the impermanence that's there, the Dhamma. So being, someone once described true meditation as standing in awe. I can't remember his name. He was a Jesuit priest. Father Kenny, he's an incredible man. I'll give you one thing that Father Kenny said, I still remember, this is 35 years ago. He had 7 or 8 nervous breakdowns by that time. And he said, losing your mind is no big deal. You just get another one. I love that. You know? Don't even hang on to your mind. Just get another one. That still impressed me. So it impressed me so much that I still hold
Isn't
on.
The
hold on.
Collected sayings of Father Kenny somewhere. Like,
pardon me.
Are there the collected sayings of Father Kenny somewhere?
There should be. He passed a little while ago, about 10 years ago, and I hate to say it, he was fully sane when he died. Unfortunately. what was I talking about, Father? What got me to that? I don't know. Oh, but it was just that. Pardon me? I was having fun. I wanted to interject Father Kenny into somehow into this, and that worked. Charlie. So, did I further your understanding of karma tonight? Or not? I mean, you can tell me.
I think we understood. I think, you know, if you rob bank shows looking over your shoulder, if you do good deeds, you don't have to look behind you. It's just two exaggerations to make the point. It's just you're so much more at peace when you move in the right way.
Yeah, that's a good example of it. And just a little bit further, as we gain control of our minds, we gain the ability to not create more karma. You know, people like to hear that control of your minds, but that's what samadhi is. It means a well-concentrated, non-distracted state. That's what the meditation practice that we do does. It's all part of that practice of the Eightfold Path, which then allows us to see magical or mystical experiences the moment they happen. and live with deep love and compassion, informed by wisdom. So, thank you all for another wonderful Dhamma session.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to the...
Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.